What's up, everyone? It's Brian, the producer of The Mark Haney Show. I want to start off by saying I hope that you and all of your family members are safe during these uncertain times. You're about to hear an episode from our new daily webinar series called Power of With. We put this together in light of recent events. We brought together all of the experts in our community to help give you resources and action steps that you can take today in order to survive during these uncertain times. If you'd like to catch the webinar live, you can find it on our website, haneybiz.com, under the events section. You can register. We go live every day at 2 p.m. We hope to see you there, and we know that we can get through this together.
So I want to welcome people who are sort of rolling in right now for the Power of With webinar series, where we're helping, each other through this crisis. It was some of my teammates' idea to put something together that brought in some of our partners to answer the real world questions and have audience participation to help each of us through this. And so in some ways, I found over this last couple of days that it's been therapeutic for me. I even started crying yesterday as I started thinking about the sacrifices that my teammates were making, the difficult moments that we're facing in our personal life, and all this is we got to keep the business going. And so today we're lucky to have people who know real estate, whether we are a renter, a tenant looking for a space, or whether we are a landlord, or maybe some of us are both, right? So today we're going to be answering questions about what are we going to do with these commitments that we have to our tenants? What are we going to do with these commitments that we have to our landlords? And is there a way to sort of navigate this without burning bridges and, you know, without embarrassment? At this time, none of us have gone through anything like this. I think if anything was close, it's probably 2008 in many ways in the real estate market, a lot of residential. But this is way different because it's so sudden. So today we're bringing on Greg and Scott. There was Capital Rivers. I forgot to turn it over to my main man, Rick. He's actually the brains. He and our team are the brains behind this. So I want to make sure Rick Spencer, my right-hand man here at Haney Biz, has a chance to sort of talk a little bit about what this means to us and what this likely means to you all as well.
Yeah, Rick? Thanks, Mark. And welcome to all of our attendees. We've been running our Power of With webinar series now for a week, every day, with some amazing partners. We've been posting all of these recordings on our YouTube channel, as well as our podcast channels. And the support from our community for one another has been overwhelming. And as we thought about community partners that could help in this crisis, we could think of none better than Capital Rivers Commercial. So we're really excited to have them as community partners. Greg Aguirre, who is president with Capital Rivers Commercial, and Scott Toussaint, who's general counsel. And they'll give you a little bit about their background in a minute. I think it's great that Scott, as a general counsel, is on the line today, especially on this topic, right? Because it's a financial question, it's a legal question, it's a relationship question. And so we've got two great experts today to help us navigate through these challenges. As we go through the webinar today, there is a Q&A icon on the bottom of your screen, so feel free to submit questions. We're usually great about getting to all questions. If we can't answer them today in the webinar, we can follow up afterwards. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome again Greg and Scott with Capital Rivers Commercial.
Thank you for having us here, and hopefully we can help some folks kind of figure out what their action plan is. It's obviously challenging times right now, and there's a lot going on, and things are changing on a daily basis. So we're just grateful to be here and participating, and hopefully we can help some folks out.
Yeah, well, thank you. We appreciate it. We're going to have questions. I know you have a presentation. So what I was thinking, Greg and Scott, let you sort of navigate through your presentation, and I will sort of interrupt you throughout with my own questions. I'm a tenant, and I am a landlord, and I have portfolio companies that are brick and mortar, and I have others that are in co-working spaces. And so they have a variety of angles from which I'm kind of taking a perspective. So hopefully I can do our audience a little bit of justice as we go. But maybe I'll let you start down the presentation if that's okay.
Yeah, perfect. And we'll do our best to answer all the questions. We did prepare a tenant survival guide, which there'll be a link at the end of the presentation, and folks can download that guide. And we're also working on a landlord survival guide. And then following that, we'll have kind of an investor survival guide. So a lot of the points are, you know, in the tenant guide also apply to the landlord side and vice versa. You know, if there's a landlord question or something that comes up on that end, you know, I encourage people to ask questions, and we'll address those as well. So it's not just specific to tenants. So might as well dive into it. I'll share my screen and go to the presentation here. One second. Okay, can everybody see it?
Yeah, it looks good.
Perfect. All right, we'll just jump into it. So, you know, a big thing is just having a plan. You know, it's really hard to do anything without a plan. So, and that plan can change, but you got to start somewhere. And so, you know, we recommend, you know, kind of starting out and just taking you know, a look at where you're at right now, you know, devise the preparedness plan. So that's what we're going to kind of go through, is the structure of how to create that.
And just, Greg, I'll just interject, just kind of clearly set the framework. I mean, the idea is you're in a situation where, you know, like you're a restaurant, you're a retailer, what have you. And again, not to make this exclusively focused to tenants, but the idea being that you're in the midst of this crisis, you're probably either getting no traffic or you've actually been required to shut your doors. You've got no income, but you've got a lease and you've got lease obligations and you've got rent coming due. In this case, April 1st, you got rent coming due. What are you going to do? Legitimately, it's a little bit of a panic time. I kind of want to get set the framework. I think we all know that, but I think it kind of helps.
Yeah, good point. And then obviously cash is king. You know, everyone's for the most part trying to preserve capital right now as best they can. So, you know, big expenditure is obviously rent and operating expenses. So I'm sure that's top of mind for anyone that's got a brick and mortar. You know, structuring the solution. So, you know, everyone's solution is going to be a little bit different depending on their situation. So, you know, we'll walk through kind of what those steps are and how to work with your landlord to come up with the appropriate solution.
And I'll just interject kind of one of the points before you even dive into your lease is maybe just take a look at your cash flow situation, maybe see where you are compared to the prior year, or maybe the prior couple years. Just kind of look at your financials and look at them as they stand currently. Kind of flesh out, are you in a seasonal business where you might be taking a dip due to that as opposed to the crisis? Or just make sure you know where you stand, how much of this is of your current situation is driven by the virus, just so you have a complete picture of your financials right now.
And one of the things I would add on that is Haney Biz, we have an accounting bookkeeping group, outsourced CFO type services. If somebody has a question about that, you can hit Rick up after or send him an email or a text or a message through here, because it's something where we're kind of just going hands-on right now and we know that there's a need. So we can help you to sort of look at your balance sheet, look at your P&L and and help you make some good decisions.
And from a landlord's perspective too, you know, most of them are going to ask the question, well, you know, what were your top line sales? What was your bottom line? You know, what was your average, and what is it compared to now? And because that's going to, you know, play a role in the negotiations and the discussions that you have with the landlord. Because, you know, most landlords want to help out, but they also don't want to give away free money, right? So it's finding that balance that works for both parties.
Do you think, like, in a situation where, let's say you have a strong enough balance sheet to, I'm thinking of one of the entities that I'm working with, they're going to have sales that go to like almost nothing, right? They're going to get cut way down, and at least for this year, it looks like. And okay, they have enough money to pay their rent, but their revenues are just, you know, are going to take a huge hit. So, you know, where does rent stack up in this thing? You know, how to rationalize that? Well, because you look at the person's balance sheet, it's like, that's good, but you know, you're expecting a lot of revenue this year. That's not going to happen.
Well, cash on hand projections, you know, managing cash flow going into the, you know, the near future. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So obviously you're going to have payroll expenses and other expenses. And, you know, there's no right solution. I think it's just really understanding where you stand today, where your financials are, and then trying to project out into, you know, the near future as best you can, you know, how much cash you're going to need to keep on hand, you know, obviously you might need to, you know, there might be some priorities, right? So you're going to set priorities in terms of how you spend that cash. And, you know, maybe rent isn't at the top of the list, and you need to have that conversation with the landlord, you know, and help them understand your business model.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's say you're preparing your plan. You don't want to make a snap decision on the plan. It's going to take you a few days. You got to come talk to Haney Biz or somebody else to kind of, and maybe sleep on it to some extent. Should you reach out to your landlord today and let them know that you're running into a situation and maybe start asking them questions? How should you be thinking about the communication?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the more communication, the better, and being proactive, I think, is critical. And so that's once you kind of run through our three steps, you know, hopefully that gives you the baseline to be able to go and have a conversation with your landlord that's based on, you know, on the facts of the situation and your current position, whether, you know, whether it's really, really bad, like I can't pay at all, or I'm preparing to make sure that I survive, you know, through this, but I, you know, maybe still have some cash on hand. So, you know, getting into kind of the, what was that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I mean, that's kind of our plan, Mark, is kind of a three-step process. And the third step is approaching the landlord after you've done your homework. Right. And I mean, frankly, you could almost just say, hey, I know I'm kind of in trouble here, landlord. I'm doing my homework. Just give them a heads up. I think that communication as much as possible, but you want a chance to get your ducks in a row probably before you have a serious conversation.
Okay. Yep.
So the things to kind of review first before you have that conversation with the landlord about, you know, what your solution might be, is obviously look at your rent. What are you paying? That includes your extra expenses, sometimes, you know, triple nets, they're called. So taxes, insurance, common area. You know, if you pay into a merchants association, or, you know, whatever your all-in gross rent number is, and what's the makeup of that? You know, when is your lease expiring? You know, do you have a year left? Do you have 2 years left? Do you have options? And that'll come into play if you enter into a rent deferral type situation and, you know, agree to amortize the deferral over the remaining term, might elect to exercise an option so that payment's not as high. You know, understand reading your default sections. You know, what does it mean if you're in default? You know, what are the penalties? You know, guarantees. You know, did you sign the lease under, you know, an LLC that maybe, you know, doesn't really have, you know, much in terms of assets. You know, that could potentially work to your advantage. Did you personally guarantee the lease? Do you have co-guarantors? You know, what does it mean for them or for you on a personal level if you default under your lease and don't make your meet your obligations? You know, security deposit, and this is an easy one. If you your landlord's holding on to a security deposit, and you know you've been a good tenant and you paid your rent and you've done everything that you said that you were going to do, you know, one of the first things you can do is say, hey, can you credit that security deposit towards my rent? You know, operating covenants and co-tenancy, you know, sometimes leases are tied to, you know, other tenants, an anchor tenant in the shopping center. So if the grocery store or, you know, maybe that grocery store is probably not the best example because they're doing well now, but, you know, maybe your lease was your business feeds off of the traffic of a gym. And so in your lease, it says, you know, if the gym closes, then you have a right to go dark or you have a right to terminate your lease. You know, so understanding those provisions and how you might be able to, you know, use those or how they might impact you is important. You know, do you have the right to go dark or not operate your business? You know, some leases say that you have to stay open. You know, just understanding those provisions is really key. Insurance, this is a big one. You know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, well, does my business interruption insurance cover anything, or does my property insurance cover anything? And the answer is, it depends. You know, and it also sometimes landlords, you know, are carrying insurance on behalf of the tenant, and they're charging you through, you know, some of these extra expenses in the lease. So understanding what the landlord's insurance is also important. And we'll talk a little bit more about insurance next. And then force majeure. This is another big topic that has been discussed as of recently, which is, you know, things that are out of your control. You know, for example, a pandemic or a hurricane or a fire. You know, sometimes in contracts, it allows for some relief or deferrals. And but there's, you know, certain, you really got to pay attention to the language. You know, for example, it might not let you out of your obligation to pay rent. You know, you'd probably still have to pay your financial obligations. So just reading through that language and understanding it as best you can is really important.
Yeah, and just take out your lease and take out a notepad and just go through all those areas of the lease that that Greg just outlined. And because those are all the things that are going to have some sort of interplay with your conversation with your landlord, at least potentially. So just kind of, it's not fun, but just kind of do the dirty work and go through your lease, make notes, make marginal notes, have a separate notepad, whatever. But just understand kind of the ins and outs of your lease.
And if you don't understand the provisions, you know, you can give us a call or call your attorney or call, you know, if you've got some other advisor that understands those provisions, you know, by all means, reach out. I mean, yeah, I think, Mark, you'd probably be the first one to agree that, you know, the business community is out there to help right now. And, you know, so I'm not, that was one of the reasons we put this guide together is we want, you know, whether they're our existing client or not, you know, reach out and we'll help you understand those provisions and what they mean.
Very cool.
Step two is kind of a continuance of step one, you know, doing your homework beyond just what's in your lease. So, you know, review your insurance policy, you know, and probably more importantly, since insurance is one of those incredibly complex, confusing, you know, topics, is call your insurance agent or provider and say, hey, here's the situation, you know, am I covered or not? You know, more than likely, if you've got business interruption insurance, unfortunately, a pandemic's probably not going to be covered. It's an exclusion unless you got an endorsement, and most people, you know, don't think to go get a pandemic endorsement. It's not something that, you know, comes up in conversation.
Yeah, you know, it's actually back in 2003 with the SARS epidemic, apparently what happened as a result of that, the insurance industry reacted by excluding pandemics specifically from business interruption insurance coverage. So that's something we learned as we dug into this. So you're probably going to be out of luck unless you happen to have some unique circumstance, or maybe you can get creative. Your insurance agent might be able to get creative. There's actually something going on in the, I think especially the restaurant industry, which is obviously kind of the prime victim of this crisis, is they're trying to get, and I think this is pretty smart, they're trying to, as a way to provide relief to the restaurant industry, the restaurant industry is trying to convince the federal government to basically force the insurance industry to cover this pandemic under the business interruption coverage. And then the idea being that they would have to, the industry would probably go bankrupt if they were just simply forced to do it without any backing from the federal government. So the idea would be federal government would require them to include coverage for this pandemic, but then they would back the industry, and that would be that would that is seen as a really efficient way to provide the financial support that the restaurant industry and probably other industries as well really need, rather than doing handouts or tax credits or something that would be incredibly cumbersome and inefficient. So I've seen a couple, at least a couple people talking specifically on that point. So,
I saw that on CNBC. And so I sort of wondered, you know, these government programs are changing right before our very eyes in different parts of the, you know, whether it be HR or, you know, the human side of things. How many people really have business interruption insurance? I mean, especially when you start talking about small business, is it really all that common?
I think it's pretty common, and I think, but maybe not small business, but maybe the on the landlord side. So okay. I think, and again, this is kind of why we say it's such an esoteric topic that you have to be an expert to really understand how it works. But I think just kind of putting two and two together, I think it is in play for in most situations. And then maybe the idea would be that the federal government just says, hey, even if they don't have business interruption coverage, put it in place. You know, if they have any policy, if they have property damage insurance, if they have liability coverage. And I think that kind of remains to be seen, but I don't imagine if you're a small business and you don't have business interruption coverage, I don't imagine you're going to be out of luck, because as you say, Mark, I don't think it's that common for the mom and pop tenants.
Yeah.
The other thing is to look at, you know, government programs. So, like we just mentioned, you know, the federal government, passed a relief stimulus, the $2 trillion relief stimulus. We have no idea what kind of is, you know, in the framework or the details of it yet. So, and, you know, unfortunately, it might be a little bit too late for some folks, but, you know, that's in the works. Local city of Sacramento has an ordinance that basically is forbidding evictions, which just applied to residential, but now applies to commercial as well. Just came out.
Passed last night or yesterday.
Yeah, last.
I saw that the county of Sacramento, though, it got voted down. Is that correct?
Yeah.
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 So if you're somebody that's in the county, right, not in the city itself, it's probably not going to be there for you. But if you are in the city, you've got that. So what is that anyway? How does that work?
Yeah, it's like everything, devil's in the details. And so we honestly have not had time yet to digest it because it just happened last night. And I just was able to find the actual ordinance by digging around about an hour or two ago. But I think it's really, and don't quote me on this, but I think the area where it's going to be of the most help to tenants is not the fact that that you can't be evicted for the next couple months. I think it's going to be the fact that it looks, again, don't quote me, but it looks like it's allowing for a 120-day deferral of your rent obligation. So I think that's where the actual value is going to be for the tenants, is it just kind of gives them some breathing room. Because I don't think landlords are going to be rushing to the courthouse to evict anytime soon, but they're going to want their rent. And I think there may be forgiveness or prohibition on late fees also. So we'll put something on our website to address this, you know, when I get a chance to examine it. But I think it may just be kind of a deferral of some breathing room on the rent obligation.
Okay.
We have links to a lot of these if you go to our website as well.
Okay. And whatever you guys share, maybe tag me on social media or something, so that way maybe I can remember to share it, or it prompts me to do something with it that could help our community as well. Because we're sharing the community, obviously.
Yeah, perfect.
For sure.
And then SBA is also providing some short-term bridge loans. And there's some information on our website about that as well, you know, to help during this time. So that, you know, that might be beneficial for some companies. And, you know, obviously taking on debt is not ideal during these times, but it might be, you know, kind of the only solution. And if it's cheap debt, then, you know, it might work well. Yeah. You know, if you're a franchisee, you know, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to your franchisor. You know, a lot of franchisors are, you know, providing some relief. Subway, you know, recently said that they're reducing their royalties by 50%, and I think they're not requiring contributions to their marketing funds and things like that. And I know there's a handful of other franchisors, you know, make sure that you're aware of that. And, you know, most likely as well, you know, landlords will, they're more sophisticated, they might ask you, hey, what's your franchisor doing for you? You know, how are they helping you? So that's important. And then understand how your landlord, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, chiming in, even if the answer from your franchisor is, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to help you, at least that you can tell your landlord that, and that shows that you've done all your homework. You're not just coming to him for charity. You've gone through every channel you can.
The other thing I've seen with franchisors is they're allowing you to put off capital expenditure. Sometimes they require you to put in an upgraded something or other in your business to stay to code or whatever, to the you know. What the franchisees need to do, but they're able to say, hey, you don't have to do that right now.
Yeah, there was a, I don't remember if it was Taco Bell or there's a handful of QSRs that had a big remodel program going on, and they said, okay, you know, we'll put that on hold. We're not going to do that requirement. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and then understanding, you know, who your landlord is and how they likely view you. You know, is your landlord, you know, a local small, you know, property owner, this is the only, you know, asset that they have, you know, if you're in a strip retail center or shopping center, you know, or are they a, you know, a large landlord with millions of square feet? Are they a, you know, real estate investment trust? Like understanding who you're dealing with and then likely how they view you. You know, are you a 1200 square foot tenant in a, you know, 300,000 square foot shopping center, and that happens to be one of 40 shopping centers that landlord owns? You know, you're probably not going to be at the top of their list in terms of, you know, getting their attention. They're going to be focusing on, their tier one, priority tenants, which are usually the anchor tenants, the nationals, and just understanding that. I mean, just the reality.
Do you feel sorry about that. Maybe I ask one question. Sorry to interrupt. A landlord that has 6 million square foot of property, isn't there some sort of requirement that they sort of treat all of the people in some kind of systematic way so that they can't pick out their favorites?
I'm
not aware of anything.
I don't believe so.
Commercial is a little different than the residential side. It's a little bit more Wild West, and kind of comes down to the economics and the negotiation. I would hope, we work with some larger landlords, like Phillips Edison is one, and the first thing they did was reach out to all of their tenants and just say, hey, we're here, and they put a task force together. They took it head on rather than just, I'm going to sit back and wait, for people to reach out to me. And they've got so much space, they had to create some sort of system to prioritize and deal with all the requests because they just got, inundated. So they're putting that, kind of system into place to be able to get back to everybody. But, just understanding the landlord's position, and you can even take it one step further, right? Which I don't think most tenants need to understand, but if your landlord owns the property free and clear, they might have a little bit more flexibility. If they have a credit union, that's got the mortgage, that might be a little bit different than if they have a CMBS loan. CMBS loans aren't going to provide much relief for the landlord, so they might be less likely to be able to assist. I don't think that you need to get into that level of detail, but just having a general understanding of who your landlord is, how big are they, how small are they, is important to understand.
Any property owner, any commercial property owner will tell you, their lender is just an enormous part of their equation of doing business as a landlord. So if they happen to own the property free and clear, that will make them a lot more able to provide flexibility. And conversely, if they're like most landlords and they've got a lender, a mortgagor or mortgagee rather, their hands really are probably going to be tied to a certain degree, but hopefully they won't abuse that and just say, I can't, my hands are tied without them actually being tied. And I think a lot of lenders will probably try to be helpful, but some may not.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Toro Capital Advisors out of LA. So they're one of our capital advisory firms. And I was just kind of asking them what they're seeing because things are obviously changing day by day. And, the hard money lenders, really pulled back and are just taking a pause. But some of the other, credit unions are your interest or your payments. So it looks like, the majority of lenders are actually working.
We got a bad connection with you, Greg. I'm sorry. I'm only catching every other word. Scott, I can hear you loud and clear. I don't know if there's anything we can do, Greg, with your connection. You've kind of gone in and out throughout the whole presentation. So I don't know if you
Yeah, why don't I maybe try and pick up maybe Greg, if you can work the slides, but I'll kind of try and work the presentation.
Yeah, perfect. I'm not sure why it's not.
Yeah, it's that internet connection in your neck of the woods. So anyway, So I think it kind of, we kind of covered all of the homework steps. You've done your lease review. You've done all your background work, contacting your insurance agent, evaluating what government relief programs may be available. If you're a franchisee, talking to your franchisor, understanding your landlord, you sort of put together your need in light of everything that's going on, putting together your internal financial review, looking at your financials, kind of what do you need to survive and in the long run thrive for your business. And now you approach your landlord. And I think that's the next slide, if you want to go to that, Greg. And so I think it's, so you're fully prepared, you approach your landlord, you reach out to them, tell them you'd like to meet. You know, I guess in this day and age, maybe that's a virtual meeting or a phone call. But you just say, hey, I'd like to talk. And then you kind of get into the nuts and bolts, you know, be willing to, and just be proactive sharing your financial data, where you're at, what's been impacted by the, or how you've been impacted, by the virus, get into it, show kind of what your needs are financially. You know, like in any negotiation, you don't want to be dishonest, but you probably want to show your kind of start high, on what you kind of need, make the case as best you can for, hey, in order to survive here, this is what I need. And just kind of stepping back, just one more variable here, you know, I guess we haven't actually said it yet, and maybe it goes without saying, but landlords are very loath to lose tenants. And, you know, aside from kind of altruism and morality, that's probably your best piece of leverage, is that your landlord just doesn't want to have to replace you. And so just keep that in mind. You've got just by the fact that they've got you on the hook for a rental obligation over a period of time, and they don't have to fill a vacancy with all the time and cost and opportunity cost that goes into that. You've got some leverage there.
Yeah, thinking about that, can I ask you about that leverage? Because I mean, none of us has a crystal ball, but you can forecast probably more clearly than the rest of us what's going to happen with the commercial market. Let's talk about Sacramento. You know, we have offices, we've got retail, industrial. Industrial has been pretty hot. Retail, I assume in brick and mortar is just sort of softer. And as we think about what this crisis is going to do to restaurants and retail, even service businesses, if people get afraid of the face-to-face, or, you know, maybe over the next 12, 24 months before society comes back, but it might come back different. So does that fear of a restaurant just going away? God, I got an end cap that's a restaurant. If that person doesn't make it, I might be vacant for a couple of years.
That's a very insightful point. And that, I think you're right. It just puts the idea that they don't want to lose you on steroids. Mm-hmm. So that a smart forward thinking landlord is going to realize that they've got a lot of incentive not to lose you and to work with you.
So I'm a landlord. Okay. So what I'm trying to put myself in both shoes a little bit so I could imagine what the ask might be. Okay. So we can't pay while we're closed, or we can only pay, you know, we're doing takeout. So our business is cut down to a third, and which makes us not profitable. We need to buy some time. Is there any thought about, hey, I'll sign a lease extension, knowing that rents in the future might be depressed? Is it safe to say that rents 24 months from now are likely going to be less than they are today? Is this a good time just to renegotiate the whole lease?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can. Can you hear me now, or is it still
cutting
out?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's situational, right? I mean, I think that human nature, we have short-term memory. So, you know, I think in the short term, everyone's still going to continue to remember, you know, this epidemic and how it impacted. And, you know, people are going to be washing their hands more and staying, you know, further away from each other. But, you know, personally, and, I think that people over time will forget and they'll move on to whatever the next big thing is. You know, so I wouldn't be quick to say, you know, restaurants are going away. I think people are, you know, social by nature, and I don't think that's going to change. And, you know, it might just change for the short term, right? You know, and then in terms of what's going to happen, you know, with the commercial market, I mean, it's kind of hard to say, but I think that it might provide some opportunity for those that, you know, are in a position right now. You know, vacancy rates have been, you know, incredibly low. So there's not been, you know, a lot of retail space available. You know, there hasn't been a lot of office space available, and certainly not industrial space. You know, there's a lot of big boxes available, but those have started filling up as well. You know, so it might create an opportunity for folks to get into some space that maybe somebody else, another business that wasn't as healthy, you know, they weren't able to make it. So,
and maybe, you know, with any would you say an opportunity might be to, especially if you've got somebody who owns a lot of property, to sort of downsize your space, but stay in with a longer term lease or something like that. So that they keep the same tenant, but you're just reducing the monthly, the monthly spend.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything at this point is on the table for discussion. Yeah, I would say that probably most landlords are going to be hesitant to do a completely new lease or, you know, completely, you know, revise the rent structure, you know, for 5 or 10 years or something like that, because we just don't know what the future holds. So, you know, I would say that, you know, most landlords, maybe not all, but would be more inclined to do kind of a short-term solution until everything kind of levels out and you can understand how it's going to impact the market. You know, otherwise you might be having the same conversation 6 months from now again. So, you know, I think it kind of just depends, but, you know, I'm pretty optimistic. You know, I think that, you know, just from talking with some of our clients, you know, they still want to grow. They still want to move forward. They just pump the brakes a little bit, but we're still looking for sites. You know, they're just being a little bit more careful, right? They're, you know, maybe not, you know, taking on the really high rent deals, or they're prioritizing a purchase versus a lease, or, you know, I mean, just kind of retooling their strategy. But, yeah, I think it kind of all just depends.
Okay. Very helpful.
So, just kind of going back into the kind of the point of making the ask and what that looks like, you know, kind of in specific terms. I mean, the most likely, most attractive option for a tenant is just getting a rent reduction. I mean, that's plain and simple. And you know what. Be great if you could just get a rent forgiveness, sort of an absolute, we're going to cut your rent in half for the next 3 months or the next 6 months, or give you 2 free months of rent or whatever it's going to be. I mean, that's your best case scenario, is something like that fits your financial profile. You realistically, you might be only able to get a deferral of your rent. So your landlord, you may need to talk to him about taking your current rent while your doors are closed, and saying, you know, we're going to take 3 months, 6 months, whatever, we're going to slice your rent or forgive it, and then we're going to tack it on later in your lease term when things we assume are going to be better. And that could be, you know, a typical thing would be spreading that out over the remainder of the term, what you call amortizing. You know, you might even take a, give that an interest component. So it's almost like your landlord's just kind of making you a short-term loan or financing your forgiveness or financing your inability to pay rent in the short term. And when you look at it that way, I mean, they're getting interest and you're ultimately agreeing to pay them back for all the forgiven rent or the deferred rent. I mean, yes, they're taking the risk that you're not going to be able to meet that obligation, but you know, aside from that, you're telling them we're going to be good for everything we've agreed to pay you. We just need more time to pay it. So you may just end up going that route.
Do you think the climate exists much right now where you can say, look, I'm going to move, I'm restructuring my entire business. I know I'm personally guaranteeing it and so on, but hey, how about if I give you a cash, basically buy out your lease? Is that, are we in a climate where that's feasible?
Yeah. I mean, it's
definitely, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Greg.
No, I definitely think that's on the table. You know, some landlords, you know, maybe they want this space back because they've got a tenant that, you know,
you're still
a little bit more later. I'm not sure what needed the internet for, I guess.
Yeah, we may have to have you jump in a little more forcefully, Scott.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, I think the short answer is absolutely a buyout's on the table. I mean, you never know what, I mean, that's on our survival guide that's one of the points. And that's available on our website and we're going to give you the link at the end. So you don't have to be taking notes on all this, but you're right, Mark, that, I mean, you never know what your landlord's particular situation is. They may just be interested in getting the space back. I know that goes kind of contrary to some of the things we've been saying, but they may very well, you know, for the right sum. There's always a price for everything, so there is some price where you could buy out your lease. You know, in this scenario, it's probably not going to be a high number that the tenant's going to want to pay or be able to pay, but it's definitely on the table. Happens all the time.
Okay. So we might, is this close to the, we have about 5 to 8 minutes left and we want to make sure we give our, Rick a chance to ask a few questions. I have a couple of more, so just kind of getting the senses to.
Yeah, we basically covered everything and, we have like kind of a few more ideas, like maybe incentives you can provide to your landlord to get them to agree to, some sort of rent reductions. And that's in the tenant survival guide. So that's a good.
Do you mind sharing that a little bit, like ideas, like something that maybe we wouldn't have thought of?
Oh, just like well, you mentioned already committing to an extended term that you didn't, you know, you're obligating yourself to more to your landlord in the long run than you currently obligated to. Maybe providing a personal guarantee if you didn't have one previously. You could even offer your landlord to share your business. Just make them an absolute partner with you. Give them silent minority partner, share your business. And just think of everything. We've covered that.
Mow the yard, do the landscaping for them.
Do the landscaping, manicure their toenails, whatever it takes.
Okay. Very helpful. And then you had a few more thoughts too, Scott?
No. I mean, that's basically it. One more, you know, you could find it if you just need to close your doors, you know, this has just destroyed your business. Go out and try and help them find a replacement for you. You know, that maybe that's your Hail Mary, you know, whatever it takes. And I think we hit most kind of the key critical ideas we had.
Percentage rent might be an option too.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Percentage for sales.
Right. Move to that sort of model, especially as your business starts coming back.
Yeah.
There's a question about a move to receipt-based rent and if that is something that you anticipate.
I'm assuming that's meaning percentage rent. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think that's on the table, you know. The landlord might have, say, hey, continue to pay your taxes, insurance, maintenance, you know, your triple net expenses, but, pay me rent based on a percentage of your sales, you know. So, you know, and once we get through this, if the sales go up, you know, it might be a windfall for the landlord. That's definitely.
You can keep paying base rent and just include a percentage rent component.
Right.
That allows you to be creative if you include that.
And if you really want to get creative, you know, you can set break points, and there's a whole thing, you know, with percentage rent that, you know, we'll probably have to get into with if somebody had some more specific questions, they can give us a call. But that's definitely an option.
Maybe you could, we've spent a lot of time talking from the tenant's perspective. From a landlord's perspective, or they're entrepreneurs. They own buildings and so on. They rent them out. Have you heard about relief for them from having to pay their mortgages or pay the banks? Is there anything on the horizon?
Not really, unfortunately. Okay. Maybe some relief if you have a government-backed loan. I've seen a program in place for that, but it's just a deferral. But unfortunately, I think the way that our system is set up is it's mostly for, you know, tenants. So it's, one idea I had, which is probably not going to go anywhere, is, for landlords that provide relief for their tenants, you know, maybe they get a tax credit, or reduced, property tax bill. But I'm not a politician, so. I don't see that going anywhere, especially in California. But
yeah, things are changing rapidly. Okay, so we have co-working space here at Haney Biz. Number of businesses have their offices here. Do you think there's going to be a trend, just putting on the crystal ball, I think a trend to more co-working or less co-working as we think about working out of our, we're all getting used to working out of our house. I mean, what trends do you see changing the real estate market from co-working to just people being a little less excited about, I agree, restaurants are probably going to make it maybe at a reduced level, but what about the other businesses where we're all used to, call centers and things like that? Are they going to...
Good question. But I can tell you that working from home is not as easy as most people are experiencing right now. You've got the dog barking or the kid coming in your office or the internet cutting out. I think there's still going to be a need for co-working. I think it might be a slow recovery, because I think people are going to be still, on edge being around other people and trying to, keep that 6 feet or whatever. But I think people are, naturally want to socialize. And I think people have short-term memory loss. And, I think they'll go back to socializing and being in a social environment. I think it might just take some time.
Okay. Rick, I want to make sure you have a chance. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I agree. I think in some ways this is going to become a distant memory faster than we expect.
I hope so. Rick, do you have some thoughts or questions that you want to, I know you want to keep us on track, but you might want to help us close it out at some level.
Yeah, we're wrapping up now. You asked my future looking question, so you stole the great question I had come up with.
Oh, dang it.
But I think Greg did a great job of answering it, and that's, we're learning new behaviors, but, we still are eager for the co-working environments and the office environments and the stability of those places. So, that's, I think, the best that we know today, right? So I just want to thank Greg and Scott and Capital Rivers Commercial for this great webinar, especially putting all the effort into this tenant survival guide and the other guides that you're creating. It's amazing to see how you're rallying around the community and creating this valuable content. So thank you so much for being a community partner with Haney Biz, and for your investment of time and expertise. We're just really appreciative to have you as partners. This will be released, this recording, again, on our YouTube channels and our podcast channels. So if you heard something that was helpful or you know someone that could benefit from this, please share it. Please visit Capital River's commercial website so you can download the guide yourself and connect with Greg and Scott, or reach out to Haney Biz and we'll get you connected. But thank you guys. This has been really helpful and extremely important information.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We appreciate it very much, and we're here to help the business community. So anyone that has questions, we're not looking to get a fee or anything like that. We just want to help. So
One thing I want to add too before we let you guys close out. So I think at this time we want to put the people in our life that can help us make the big decisions. And so whether it be in real estate or with personnel or with the numbers, we need to put people in our lives. So you guys came from the sleep train. So you guys have your own business today. But you were key in the enormous growth of the sleep train. So your background is sort of part of the entrepreneurial story of Sacramento, and now you're doing it again on your own. So I think it's always good to work with people that know what success looks like, and now they're helping other people to find that success as well. Thank you.
Yeah, we learned a lot from Dale Carlson. He's a great leader and mentor, and a lot of what we do in our business and our business model is as a result of the things that he did. And surrounding yourself with good people and looking out for each other, and those are all key things that that we truly believe in, and we learned a lot of that from Dale.
Thank you guys.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. And to the attendees, we hope to see you again tomorrow, 2 p.m. We have Silver's HR talking about just a few small changes in the HR world and how important that will be for employers and entrepreneurs, small businesses, et cetera. So keep following us, keep attending, and thank you, everyone, for your support. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys.